Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Joan P. I'm zooming in from Mountain View, and I'm really happy to be here today. I have been coming back to OA for 21 years, and when I first came in, I weighed something 30 plus pounds more than I do now on my body, but I had about 3,000 pounds of extra garbage in my head. Oh my gosh, I didn't realize that my emotional and mental and spiritual problems were probably about 100 times bigger than my physical ones, but that's what this program has helped me with. I'll talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. The house I grew up in felt very tense to me all the time. My parents were both very intelligent people, very good at planning and executing and budgeting and doing projects. They were both very, very good at all of those things. But when it came to emotional stuff, like taking care of each other or talking about feelings, they were not good at it. There was no alcohol in our house, but it felt like an alcoholic household. I consider my dad to be kind of a rageaholic. I think he was a fearful person and wanted to be in control all the time. And when things did not go his way, he would just explode. And I wouldn't know when it was going to happen. So I'd be going along thinking everything is fine. And all of a sudden, I'm getting a spanking or somebody's yelling. And I felt like in danger, but like I didn't understand. So I couldn't really figure out how to stop it. So one of my first memories, I think I must have been about 4 years old, is going to the store and stealing a piece of candy from the store and going home and hiding in my closet in the dark and eating it and feeling terrible, not even being able to taste it, but somehow thinking that this is what I had to do. I had to eat this sweet thing, and that somehow that would maybe manage my feelings. And I kind of feel like, bam, okay, that's it. That's my coping strategy that I get for the next 40 or so years. I think I also learned how to be just what you might call hypervigilant. Like I have an antenna. It is always on, it is always up, it is always receiving your feelings and what I think you might be feeling. And I'm trying to second guess everyone and everything. And my mom's take on life was, you have to make people like you. And she would volunteer for every committee. She would be in the PTA. She'd be in the church committees and talk nice all the time, no matter how she felt. And so what I learned from her was, if people like you, you are good and the world is good. If anyone doesn't like you, all hell could break loose. Like my dad could have a temper tantrum. I mean, really, that was the way I was wired in my head, which I see now, none of it was true, but that was the best conclusion I could draw with the tools that I had. So I learned how to sneak food and eat it later, lie about food, cover up what I had eaten or not eaten. I remember in eighth grade going to like a party at a classmate's house and just being next to the cookie tray, and somebody said to me afterwards, "Oh my God, Joan, you stood there next to the cookies and you basically ate all of them." And I had no memory of it, but I could totally believe it. And then in high school, feeling very uncomfortable around, my own body and boys and sexuality. And again, like just hovering over the food table because that was the only way I knew how to handle it. And I remember having nightmares at the time. And in my dream, I'd be like in a room with this long table that had all this junky party snacky food on it and feeling like I have to eat all of this. And it felt horrible and I didn't want to, but I had no choice. And for me, that is how my disease felt. I went away to college, felt really nervous about meeting new people, but couldn't face that feeling. Oh, we're not allowed to be nervous. And so the only way I knew how to bond was like, oh, let's go buy lots of treats and sit on the floor and eat them together. And that's how I'll get to know you. And that's how I'll make you like me. And then even when I got married as an adult, I was not fully honest with my husband about what I was eating. So he didn't see it. And I was really good at, taking the wrappers and getting them into the trash or whatever it was where he didn't see it. And there was one moment early in our marriage, I'm in my 20s, where I tried going to OA for like 5 months, and I learned just enough to learn that I'm not a bad person trying to be good. I am a sick person who wants to get well. I saw folks like you in the rooms just laughing, being completely honest about everything in their lives, and yet not being afraid. And I was like, that blew my mind, but I wanted that. I wanted what you had. But then after about 5 months, my husband would be like, I don't understand why you want to go out at night with people that I don't know, and I'm not invited to come, and I don't even understand why you're going. So he would kind of, it would be unpleasant. And so I stopped going. But I remembered, I remembered your message. You carried the message. Yay, that's our what, tradition five or something. And so then what brought me into program? I had an episode in my late 30s for like a year, which a psychologist told me afterwards that it might be a thing called hypermania, like not quite manic, but kind of the next best thing to that. I was like wired, I was revved up and not sleeping and kind of having risky behavior, and I was not hungry and the weight just dropped off. Oh my God, that's never happened in my life, right? I was just a little insane for a while. And then as I started to come out of it, I started to put the weight back on and I couldn't control it. Like a pound or two a month, it was just happening and I felt so powerless. And that's when I remembered what OA had told me, that there is a solution. And then it was Thanksgiving weekend of 2003. Family were together. I was really upset at my dad. And I remember consciously going into the kitchen. I hadn't been back to OA yet. I went into the kitchen with all the, stuff piled around, and I'm like on a search and destroy mission. I'm like, I am going to find the sugariest things and I'm going to eat them all to show you how mad I am or whatever. And so then the next day I'm like crying. I go online, I looked for a meeting, I found a meeting, I go to the meeting, I'm crying. And I thought, oh my God, okay, I give up, I'm here. And there was this one really nice lady at the meeting who just took me in her arms afterwards and she was hugging me, like patting my back. It's like, oh honey, it's okay. Oh, it's okay. And in a way, I think it's funny. I've incorporated that image into my idea of who my higher power is, who I call God, but everybody can call it whatever they want. And for me, it's really important that it has to have that forgiving character, that loving, you might call it feminine, the cuddly, I love you no matter what. Because that's not what I learned when I was a kid. Between the religious services I went to and my parents, what I think I got was, well, anybody more powerful than me is dangerous. I better look out for them. I better have my defenses up. So I had to really, like, adjust my point of view to start working the steps and to start to say, well, who could this higher power be? And I'm like, well, it has to be somebody where I feel like crawling into their lap and sitting there in their arms on the rocking chair and they are singing me a lullaby, My higher power also has to be like the ideal father, who I have never met anybody like this, but in the books they say that a father should be, wise and strong and kind and gives good advice all the time and defends you from bad stuff. And I also wanted my higher power to be like a lover who loves you like the beloved, who is always rushing to want to do something for you and to care about you. And I also needed my higher power to be a lot like a golden retriever. Like, oh, so much. This is so wonderful. Where are you today? I'm coming with you. Wag, wag, wag. You're the best, always, every single day. And I was like, all right, I need all of those things in my higher power. And then I learned more from other people sharing about their higher powers. So it kind of grew, grew, and grew, and grew. When I first came into program, I tried sponsoring myself. I don't recommend it. It does not work. I got a sponsor. And it was not a good fit. Like we would have a date to call on the phone and she wouldn't be available or something. Anyway, that ended. And then I found another one and she was great. She just told me what I needed to hear. And I remember writing my step four, which is my moral inventory. and bringing it to her house to read it to her for step five, and thinking, oh, I'm just going to shock her all to pieces. This is going to be such a long, drawn out process. She listened to me say my piece, and she's going, okay, sounds like a whole lot of stuff you did was out of fear. Does that sound about right? And I go, yeah. So, okay, great. You're done with step five. Move on. And I was in a way disappointed, but another way I was reassured. Like, we're all in this together. And that is one of the wonderful things I've learned about being in program is if there's any perfect people, I haven't met them. The people I like hanging out with the best are the ones who are broken and we know we're broken, or we're wounded, or we're soft and squishy, we're vulnerable, we don't have answers. Like, that is my people. That is who I want to hang out with. This is how I get my strength. And I loved it when we read aloud, you know, it is weakness, not strength, that binds us to each other. For me, that is so important. And so, okay, so what it's like now? How do I work my program? I don't know how to work it perfectly. So what I claim is imperfect abstinence, where I plan my food the night before, I write it down, and I follow my food plan the next day. And maybe something changes if it needed to, or maybe I had a little bite extra or not enough. I write it all down that night, you know. So I always have, here's what the plan was, here's what I really did. And I forgive myself a lot. And if I do anything that's kind of compulsive, I talk to my sponsor about it within 24 hours. We talk about what might have been going on. Like, oh, really? I was being tired. Really? I was being angry. And it's kind of like, if, okay, you had a slip. But if today you are being abstinent, then that is a slip. We don't call that a relapse. And for me, that works the best. The one day at a time is what works the best. I'm not really good at counting, you know, days of abstinence because it's imperfect. What I can claim is I have kept coming back since Thanksgiving of 2003. My last conscious binge was 2005, also Thanksgiving weekend. You think there's a pattern here? I have a real problem with that time of year. And I've got a sponsor who I communicate with every day. I have sponsees, which is just a godsend, because they communicate with me and I communicate back with them. And so, boy, that tell you, that gets me through life between meetings. Just, I mean, really, in a day, I will often have contact with five or six program people and we're discussing our lives in terms of program. And for me, that is just such a relief. You know, it's not like other people where I gotta pretend that I've got my act together or I have answers or whatever. We can all just be like, yeah, what do you think? Yeah, powerless over that. Gotta practice acceptance on that. I mean, it's like, thank goodness I can kind of let my guard down. What else is it like now? For me, the spiritual part of the program. It is a spiritual program. It's all spiritual, but that's what I'm really experiencing in my life right now. So I'll just tell you how I'm putting it into practice. I retired from my career last August, and with my higher power's help, I decided, okay, I'm not going to sign up for any big projects or commitments for at least 6 months. And it was good that I made that decision because I already had a to-do list. You know, there's things in the garage needed cleaning and a whole lot of, you know, the holidays, all these kinds of things to get through. And then sure enough, after about 6 months, it started to bubble up. And I'm like, well, I'm feeling like I want a little more social contact with people. I'm going to check into some options for volunteering. So I'm doing that now, you know, getting qualified, checking this out, checking that out. One advantage of not being a perfectionist anymore is I don't have to solve it immediately. I can, you know, tell the volunteer coordinator, let me try a shift in the food pantry. I tried that. And then the next week, I'd like to try a shift in the senior lunch, please. You know, and I tried that. I like that one better. So then I said, okay, I'm going to sign up for that one. I get to take things slow. I get to not have all the answers. Another spiritual thing for me is my hobby. I study calligraphy. I've been doing it for several years, still a total beginner. And it's really scary to me to have to create new things, to splash paint on paper to make a background where then I'm going to put letters on it. It's funny to me how scary that is because I think it goes to some of my core stuff about don't make a mistake, be perfect the first time out of the box. But I'm able to like take myself to workshops. I went to one a few months ago that was about trying new methods, splashing paint on paper, and if you like it, use it. If you don't like it, do it again and do it differently. And I need that. I need that loosening up. I think I've always been very wound very tight, you know. That's kind of how I grew up. So I'm still in the unloosening process here. And right now I'm asking my higher power also to help me with how I spend my time, because God kindly brought some new sponsees to me over the last 6 months, because I had said I'm up for more program. And what do you know? You know, these different people asked me to sponsor them, and they're new in program and they need a lot of attention. And so I'm just kind of living into that to say, okay, how much time am I really spending each day? And to really notice what that is this working for me? So far, I think it is. But I'm trying to be more conscious about things. And if I needed to, I could go and I could say, could we just, you know, just do one exchange of voicemails a day instead of two or three, or you know, whatever. I could move things around a little bit. I've always loved reading. I'm spending more time reading. That is fantastic. I need more exercise. I'm getting more exercise. That is fantastic. But the other last piece, and I'll just, you know, end on this note, is I don't know how long I have on this planet. You know, it could be 30 years. It could be 3 years. It could be tomorrow. I have no idea. So, in a way, that could be scary. But because I have this program, I don't feel so scared. I feel much more like, let's do what counts. Let's do it right now, today. If there's a choice that I can make or a change that I can make to bring me a little bit closer to peace and serenity, oh my gosh, I gotta try to do it now and not put it off. Thanks again to Anne for inviting me, and I really look forward to hearing what y'all have to say.